This is On Belief, a podcast about cults by Karen Geyer. Season 2, Episode 12, Abusive Relationships.
You were very sure from the start that he was the one.
Cheers.
She has a date with a guy. This one has potential.
His name is John Meehan.
I'd be scared to date people online.
Oh my God, look at you. It's inspiring.
Oh my God, you're dating a doctor?
What about you?
You're an artist.
You are so wonderful.
Hey, look, open house. Want to take a look?
Sure. Ronnie thinks that John is creepy.
There's something wrong with him.
What if she doesn't see it?
You don't know him well enough yet.
You don't know him at all.
If you want to win over Ronnie, just don't leave.
Either that or I could take her out with a Winchester 30-06 and a 1,000-yard headshot.
What?
You married him? You married him.
Hey, what's in the safe, kiddos?
It's my money, John.
Everything that's yours is mine.
I hired a private detective.
Worry about your own sad little life, and I'll worry about Debbie.
He's lying to you. He's lying to you about everything.
No more being nice, is that what you want? You don't even know who I am.
John?
John. Dirty John. Why are you doing this?
The media often portrays abusive relationships as these kind of worst-case scenario life or death situations. But the vast majority of abusive relationships tread a very fine line. In fact, many people might be in a relationship with an abuser and not even know it for a very, very long time. The reason for this is the same reason that a lot of people don't realize that they're in cults: sociopathy. Here to discuss this and more is Donna Anderson, founder of lovefraud.com. Welcome, Donna.
Donna, how did you get started researching this? What made you think to investigate love fraud?
The reason I got into love fraud is because of my personal experience with a sociopath. I became involved with a man by the name of James Montgomery. We got married, and this man turned out to be a complete sociopath. He took $250,000 from me. He cheated with at least 6 different women during our 2.5-year involvement. He had a child with one of those women. And then 10 days after I left him, but long before we had a divorce, he married the mother of the child, which turned out to be the second time that he committed bigamy. I was just astounded at this behavior. I couldn't imagine what was going on. And I was seeing a therapist at the time. As you can imagine, I had some issues to talk about. And I was describing her behavior, and she said to me, "He sounds like a sociopath." And I'm like, "Sociopath? What is that?" So I started looking into it. And sure enough, as I learned more about what the signs of the disorder was, I realized I was involved with a sociopath or psychopath. And I realized that this was unbelievable and that I had no idea people like this existed. And here I was, a college graduate, a journalist, running my own business, very successful. And I figured that if I didn't know about it, I'm sure other people didn't know about it either. And so that's why I started Love Fraud, in order to tell people that folks like this exist. I mean, someone who appeared to be a successful businessman, you know, dressed well, spoke well, he was a complete con artist. And I had absolutely no idea that people like this were out there. And so I wanted to warn others that they are.
On this show, we've talked about recruitment for cults a lot. But you talk about in your books that sociopaths target people and basically recruit them into becoming a part of this relationship. So can you explain how that works?
In my view, because I actually came at it from the reverse perspective, because I was learning about sociopaths and then because of that found out about cults. And as I was reading what was going on in cults, I was like, oh my goodness, it's exactly the same pattern, exactly the same technique. And in fact, in my personal opinion, I believe that all cult leaders are probably sociopaths or psychopaths on steroids. I mean, you know, they just take it to a much higher level than those who are just manipulating, you know, one or two people. But and the cult leaders can have like thousands, and then they can have minions and all this other stuff. But I think it's the same personality disorder. And it's interesting because one of the key techniques that sociopaths use when targeting an individual is love bombing. And by that, we mean they shower you with attention. They tell you how wonderful they are. They sweep you off your feet. They want to be around you all the time. They're planning out all the dates like a month in advance. And love bombing was actually invented by cult leaders. In fact, the term was first described by the Moonies, by Sung Young Moon. And he actually talked about love bombing in a positive sense, in that, you know, they were showering the people in their cult, you know, with all this attention and everything. But love bombing, the term, was actually first used in the Moonies organization.
If I've just started dating somebody, can you walk me through what are some of the signs that would indicate that I might be dating a sociopath?
I actually have written a book exactly on this topic, which is called Red Flags of Love Fraud, 10 Signs You're Dating a Sociopath. We can go through the warning signs, but I want to preface it by saying that you're probably not going to see it in one dinner across the dinner table. You know, it does take some time to see the signs. And the first one is charisma and charm. And what that means, of course, is that someone who has a sociopathic personality disorder tends to be very magnetic, they tend to be charismatic, they tend to be very charming, and of course, that's exactly what cult leaders are, so there's a direct correlation there. I did research on this to validate these warning signs, and charisma and charm was named by like 96% of the survey respondents as what they saw in the person who turned out to be a sociopath. The next thing that was most important was the concept of sudden soulmates. In other words, when you meet someone like this, they present like the person you've been waiting for all your life. It seems like you have so much in common, you have all the same beliefs, and you want all the same things out of life. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is that sociopaths study you, figure out what it is that you're looking for, and then turn themselves into that person. So the whole thing is very contrived. Of course, now this is a situation that comes up in remote romantic relationships, but the next warning sign is sexual magnetism. And sociopaths seem to have lots of sexual energy, and there's a reason for that as well, and that is because both male and female sociopaths are very high in testosterone. And testosterone makes you pursue sexual conquest. So that's exactly what they do. And most people who were romantically involved say that the sex was extraordinary, at least in the beginning. But eventually it may or may not continue that way because sociopaths also lose interest and then they, you know, or may want other things. And of course, in lots of cults, you know, there's a lot of sexual manipulation going on. So there's definitely something in common there. The next item on my list is the love bombing, you know, which I talked about before. You know, they're showering you with attention and telling you how wonderful you are, and they just really lay it on thick. So what happens is, you know, someone who's on the receiving end of this, of course, thinks that this is extraordinary and wonderful, and that's what essentially draws people into the involvement to begin with is just all this attention that they thrive on. It just makes them feel like they're on cloud nine. So the problem with those first four traits is that there's nothing wrong with them to begin with. I mean, they sound like a dream date. I mean, who wouldn't want to be involved with someone who's charismatic and sexy and thinks you're wonderful? So, you know, that's why it's so hard to spot them right away. So it's really important to look at the other traits that are not as positive. Like the next one is blames other for everything. And this is really key because just about all sociopaths do this. They, you know, anything that happens is not their fault. You know, somebody's out to get them. Somebody didn't do what they're supposed to do. They've always got an excuse. They never take responsibility for anything that's going on. So that's key because it is one that you'll start to see fairly early on, in that, you know, if there's any trouble, you know, it's never the sociopath's fault. He never did anything, or she never did anything. There's a few more, like lies and gaps in the story is critically important. Just about all sociopaths lie. The problem with lying, of course, is that you don't see it right away. It's often later on when you really find out what was going on that you realize that everything this person ever told to you was a lie. So those are five of the 10 of, you know, the warning signs. And the important thing to know, I mean, there's more, and you know, if your listeners are interested, they could go to Love Fraud and see the rest. You need to see the entire pattern or much of the pattern, because there isn't one trait that makes someone a sociopath. It's this whole pattern of behavior, a pattern of conduct. And that's why it's very important for people to educate themselves about what these warning signs are, so that if you start to see this pattern, you know what it means.
Even if a relationship like this hasn't happened to you, it probably has happened to a friend of yours, a sister, a brother, a coworker. People can lose years of their lives to abusive partners. How does that come about?
What happens, of course, is that people get roped into these situations, and, you know, there is a lot of brainwashing that goes on, you know, which is another aspect in which it's similar to what goes on in cult situations. It's actually pretty complicated what happens, because what happens is that these relationships are highly addictive, you know, with sociopaths. And it just actually is. In fact, you know, if you look at the research, all romantic relationships are considered to be addictive, you know, because, you know, when you're in love, you do crazy things, you have no judgment, and this is just regular romance, let alone when you're involved with a sociopath. But what happens with a sociopath is that because they pour it on so thick in the beginning, that it draws people in even more, because all relationships are essentially psychological bonds that form between a couple of people. And the bond is established in the beginning because of pleasure. And somebody makes you feel good, you know, you're having a good time, you like this person. And as I said, with the sociopaths pouring it on, the pleasure is even more intense than it is with a regular date or a regular person that you might be involved with. So, I mean, that's why you feel you're on cloud nine, is because this person is just so overwhelmingly swept over with you. So what happens is, you know, you fall in love, or the bond begins to form then. And then what happens is that the sociopath does something to create fear and anxiety in the partner. And usually the fear is that they might lose the relationship. So they might go off in a huff, they might lie, they might cheat and then deny that they ever did it. They do something that upsets the partner. Now, the partner, the victim, the target in this case, doesn't know where this came from and just wants the relationship to go back to how wonderful it was in the beginning. So the partner may plead, they may, you know, let's talk about it, let's do this, let's do that. Many of them apologize for things that they never did. And eventually the sociopath may relent and they kiss and make up. So what happens is the bond gets established in the beginning. They have this incident that causes fear and anxiety in the partner. Fear and anxiety actually make the psychological bond stronger. Okay. So then what happens is that, you know, they go through this period of trying to reconcile. That makes the bond stronger again. And then what happens is that it's all hunky-dory again. Maybe they have sex. That makes the bond stronger again. And it keeps going around in this vicious circle where, which each turn of the wheel, the bond gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And that's one of the big reasons why people can't get out of it, is because the psychological bond just gets so strong that they can't escape.
You go into detail in your book about a chemical that we have in our brains called oxytocin. So can you explain that for us?
Oxytocin is known as the cuddle chemical, and essentially what it is a neurotransmitter and a hormone that helps people stay together. It is very important for trust to develop, and oxytocin is released in the body with any type of intimacy. I mean, it can just be having conversation. It could be having physical contact, like a hug. It certainly happens during sex, and it is also highly related to childbirth and nursing. So that the body releases this oxytocin. And oxytocin has the effect of making people feel calm and content and relieving fear and anxiety. So nature actually put oxytocin to created this as part of the survival of the species, because the idea was to get parents to stay together long enough so that they would raise their children. So oxytocin just enables people to trust each other. And actually, con artists know about this because they actually try to get to trust them. And the way that they do that is by showing trust in the other person, whoever the target is. So the idea is that they do things that make you trust them, that gets you involved with them, and it also makes you hesitant to leave. So it's interesting because this happens in normal people, but sociopaths don't bond the way regular people do. And one of the theories of that is that they don't have the appropriate oxytocin receptors. So while, you know, they may be capable of initiating this intimacy, which gets their target hooked on the relationship, it doesn't actually affect them. And if you look at the numbers, it's pretty interesting because there's a scientific estimate that approximately 5% of the population do not have appropriate oxytocin receptors. The figure for how many people could have antisocial personality disorder is about 4%. So it looks to me that, you know, there could be a correlation there.
There's a concept in your book called flying monkeys that I was hoping you could explain further. We've heard other people refer to this. For instance, Catherine Oxenberg, when she was on the show, referred to Keith Raniere's flying monkeys who did all the dirty work for them. So how does that work in abusive relationships?
In recovery circles, and there's a lot of this discussion online now, essentially flying monkeys fill the same role as you described with the cult leaders. They're the ones who the sociopath manages to get to do the dirty work. As you said, they spy on the target, they report back. That's probably the main thing that they do, is they're like you know, little infiltrators that spy and do different things. The term came from The Wizard of Oz, you know, the flying monkeys with the Wicked Witch of the West. And so that's what they do. Sometimes it can be really difficult to combat it. The flying monkeys themselves may or may not be aware of what they're doing, you know, because what often happens is the sociopath will create an image of the target. And typically what they do is they question the target's mental capacity. You know, they say that the person is mentally unstable. I mean, this is just classic sociopathic strategy. But the way that they do it is that they seem to be so concerned, is, you know, I don't know what's wrong with Mary. You know, she's just, ever since the kids were born, she must have postpartum depression or something. She's just getting worse and worse. And so, you know, they feign this concern about the person, And then they say something like, you know, could you please check up on her and make her, let her, let me know how she's making out, because I'm really concerned. So the flying monkey is doing this stuff, thinking that they're helping, when what they're doing is providing, you know, information and feedback back to the sociopath so he can continue his manipulation.
We're socialized from a young age to try to get along with people. And we're also socialized from a young age to treat people being nice to us or people making advances on us with respect and to be welcoming towards that. But that actually can get us into some trouble when it comes to sociopaths. Can you explain how that works?
The key is to know that sociopaths are out there. I probably should clarify who I'm talking about when I mention sociopaths. Love Fraud uses the word sociopath as an umbrella term for multiple diagnosable personality disorders in which the people who have these disorders tend to exploit and manipulate others. Clinically, they could be diagnosed as having antisocial, narcissistic, borderline, histrionic, or psychopathic personality disorder. The problem is, you know, there's a lot of overlap among these disorders. There's a lot of similar behaviors. There are some differences. There are some differences in how they get started and how the disorders come about. But from the point of view of those of us who don't have the disorders and who are potential targets, we need to be able to talk about them in general. I mean, it's just not good for communication. You know, let's avoid antisocial, narcissistic, borderline, histrionic, and psychopaths. You know, it's just too much of a mouthful. So I refer to them all as sociopaths. Sociopath actually is no longer a clinical diagnosis. At one point it was, that the term was then discarded and antisocial personality disorder took its place. So a lot of professionals still view sociopath essentially as a shortened way to say antisocial personality disorder. So the term is out there. It's not really doing anything. So I like to use it for this purpose to cover all of them. The problem is, in order to avoid these people, you have to know they exist. And that's actually Love Fraud's biggest mission, is just convincing the world that sociopaths are out there, and they're out there in large numbers. So that's the first thing. You need to know they exist. And then you do need to know some of the warning signs. I mean, we need to educate ourselves about how we can be manipulated and what the warning signs are. But the true key to avoiding getting involved with these people is to listen to your intuition, you know, because we all have an intuition. It's baked in, you know, it's something that's been around for millennia, the same as the oxytocin. And the whole purpose of intuition is to protect us from predators. Unfortunately, especially in our Western society, we don't pay attention to it. You know, we're taught to think about, you know, well, you need evidence and you need proof and all this other stuff. And intuition doesn't work on evidence and proof. It gives you a nudge, a hit, you know, right in the beginning. So if we were able to learn to listen to our intuition, we will get these warning signs and we will know when something is dangerous, or when someone is not who they say to be, or what they're saying is not the truth. And trusting our intuition is absolutely the best way to protect ourselves.
In the book, you talk about how sociopaths engage in smear campaigns. Can you explain what a smear campaign is and how to identify if it's happening to you?
The smear campaign is the sociopath's effort to discredit whoever the target is. And typically what happens is that the sociopath embarks on the smear campaign long before the target even knows that there's any kind of a problem. And the objective is to discredit the target and take away his or her support system. So it's kind of what I was talking about before. You know, a key smear is that, you know, somebody is mentally unstable, psychotic, and things like that. And the sociopath will start telling people long before as I said, the target has any awareness that there's an issue, the sociopath will go to friends and family and start spreading lies and rumors about the target. And the objective is to make it so that once the target starts to realize what's going on and, you know, finally gets up the courage to say that, you know, this guy has, or girl has been doing all these things and, you know, it's really a bad situation. And by the time the target reaches out for help and goes to his or her friends and family, the friends and family are primed not to believe her and primed to believe that she's the problem and that everything that she's saying is false and that, you know, she's mentally unstable because that's what her charming husband or friend or whatever has said. And so what happens is the targets end up with their support system totally gone when they need it the most.
You explain another concept in your book, and that concept is called hoovering. What is hoovering, and why is it dangerous?
Hoovering happens once you get away from a sociopath, and then the sociopath tries to get you back into the relationship. And that's why the word hoovering is used, because it refers to the vacuum cleaner. You know, they're trying to suck you back in. So, and that happens a lot, you know, people escape and then the sociopath will come up with some kind of a ploy or a reason to try and draw them back into the involvement. Sometimes, I mean, I've heard stories of they actually get on their knees and cry. I've heard of sociopaths who promise that, well, they all promise they'll never do it again and that they're going to change. But some have said, you know, they're going to go to therapy, they're going to go to church, all these different types of things. And so essentially the objective is to draw the target back into the involvement, back into the web. So it's actually a very important concept because, you know, targets need to know that sociopaths don't always give up easily, that they will try to draw you back in.
We've been conditioned by movies to believe that somebody chasing you to the airport is extremely romantic and not scary or creepy or weird at all. But if somebody is a sociopath and they're doing that, they're not doing it to be romantic. It is very calculated.
It's very hard to make blanket statements about what's good and what's bad, because sure, I mean, there can certainly be possibilities where it would be okay. I remember one story, you know, a guy asked this woman out 10 times, okay? And this was a long time ago, you know, so 10 times. And, you know, today, you know, if someone asks you out 10 times, you'd be accused of assault, you know, or something like that. But he asked her out 10 times and she finally accepted and they dated and then they got married and they were married for 50 years. It's hard to say exactly what the dividing lines are. So that's why it's important to look at the entire picture. You know, if you've always gotten along fine and you had one fight and then the guy, you know, wants to chase you to apologize, well, that's one thing. But if the guy has been lying and manipulating and then you finally break up with him and then he tries to draw you back in, well, that's a totally different story. So it's very important to understand the context and to be looking for the entire patterns of behavior. And again, to listen to your intuition. If you have a real gut feeling that you're being manipulated, that something is wrong, or if you feel like you aren't free to be yourself, I mean, those are the things that you want to be looking for. And if that's what you're escaping, then no, you don't want to go back to it.
When you say the term abusive relationship, people tend to automatically go in their mind to a physically abusive relationship, but not all relationships that people have with sociopaths are physically abusive. Most are emotionally abusive and mentally abusive. So explain to me why it's important that we understand that.
I can say that we have research. My colleagues and I did some research and we asked people who had gone to therapy because of an abusive relationship, we asked them what type of abuse that they endured. physical abuse was the least common. The prime types of abuse that they endured were emotional and psychological, with like 98% of our survey respondents reporting emotional and psychological abuse. And then, I'm going from memory here, so I'm not quite sure if it's accurate, but the next thing that was most important was the financial abuse, which was endured by, I think, around 70% of people. Below that was the sexual abuse, and then the physical abuse was only experienced by 42% of our survey respondents. That shows you that physical abuse, for sure, is not the only symptom of being involved with a sociopath, and that the emotional and psychological abuse is far more common. And lots of people have told me that they felt that the emotional and psychological abuse was more destructive, and it would have been easier if the person had hit them, because, you know, then they say, okay, he hit me, I can leave. But, you know, when someone is messing with your mind, you know, you're not quite sure what's going on, and it's very difficult to see what's going on. It's important to understand that, yes, psychological and emotional abuse is very destructive, and it's going to happen far more often than physical abuse.
There's another parallel between sociopathic relationships and being a member of a cult and having a relationship with a leader, and that's that leaders in those situations and partners in these situations will work you up mentally, so you are always in a position where you are trying to impress them or trying to give them things that they need. And that's very dangerous.
One of the things that sociopaths do that is somewhat related to what you're talking about is that they keep changing the goalposts. In other words, you know, what you do to make them happy today doesn't make them happy tomorrow. And what they say that they want today, they no longer want tomorrow. They want something else. And then they're angry with you for not anticipating what they changed their mind to what they wanted. What happens is this creates a lot of unbalance in the target, because the target never knows what it is that's going to make this person happy. You know, they keep changing the line in the sand. First the line's here, then it's over here, then it's over here. And so it creates this unsteadiness, and it creates just a general phenomenon of what we call walking on eggshells, because you never know what's going to set the person off. You never know what's going to make them happy, you know, what's going to elicit a tirade from them. And this process of keeping the target off balance is one of the ways in which the sociopaths exert control over them. It's very successful, because, you know, the targets become very compliant, because they can't anticipate what's going to happen. So this is one of the methods through which the sociopaths are successful in exerting power and control over their targets.
Something that cults do and sociopaths in relationships do is set up this us versus them mentality, and this idea that no one will ever love you as much as I do. You know, in a cult situation, it would be, you will never have an experience like you've had with us when you go outside. I mean, I've sat here and people have told me that they were threatened that they would develop cancer if they left.
It's very typical for sociopaths to get to that point where they are criticizing the target. Of course, you know, the relationship started out where they're telling the target, you know, you're the most beautiful person in the world. You're the person I've been waiting for all my life. And all these compliments that they offer the person put them on a pedestal. And then they start to chip away. First, what happens is that they start to become critical. You know, they used to love their independence. Well, now you're too headstrong. They used to love your ideas, and now your ideas are stupid. So, you know, they slowly start to chip away at the person. This just keeps going. And the objective is to really take away the person's sense of self. And it's another opportunity, another strategy that the sociopaths use in order to exert power and control over someone. So they do definitely get to the point that they're saying that nobody loves you, you know, everybody thinks you're an idiot, you know, no one's going to take care of you the way I do. And they say all those things, the objective being to make it so that the Target believes that they have no choice but to stay in the relationship.
If people know one thing about Scientology, it's this, and that is that they will use any secrets that are divulged to them in auditing or any kind of services against you as part of a program called Fair Game. This happens in other cults too all the time, but it also happens in sociopathic relationships. Explain how that works.
You have just identified a very common tactic that sociopaths use. And essentially what they do, and this actually happens pretty much in the beginning of a relationship where they're getting to know each other, and the sociopath will say, "No, so tell me your deepest dreams," you know. And then of course the sociopath promises to make them come true. But then they also, you know, just really ask questions, and they seem to be so interested and so understanding. And so the person feels like she or he can trust the sociopath with whatever has happened in their past. The target may reveal things that have happened. You know, maybe they used to be a drug abuser. Maybe they had, I mean, anything that could have happened. You know, maybe they were, you know, had a criminal record. Maybe they might not think so much about church, that they were thrown out of church or anything, you know, whatever the painful secrets the person may have, they reveal in the context that they believe that they're sharing their deepest and darkest secrets with the person who's going to love them for the rest of their life. And then the time comes where the sociopath has decided that they're not interested in the relationship anymore, or for whatever reason, they turn all these secrets into ammunition. And they use it to destroy the person. And, you know, maybe they bring it out in court, you know, if they have a court battle, I mean, who knows? But it's a very common strategy that what they do is that they appear to be listening so deeply and being so concerned and so understanding. And then sometime down the road, it all turns into ammunition.
If you ask people whether they think that they're good at figuring out if someone's lying to them, almost everybody would say yes. So are we good at being able to tell whether someone's lying to us?
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, research shows that people can pick out a lie only 53% of the time. And then they have all those things that, you know, signs that somebody's lying. You know, they look up and to the left or up and to the right, you know, whatever it is. They can't make eye contact, whatever those symptoms are. Well, if anybody thinks that true, they've never been lied to by a sociopath, you know, because a sociopath is quite capable of looking deep into your eyes and lying to your face. They pass polygraph tests, you know, because the way a polygraph test works is that it picks up anxiety, because most people have some anxiety when they lie. So it picks up that you're sweating or that your heart rate goes up or something like that. Well, sociopaths feel totally entitled to lie. So if they take a polygraph, you know, there is no reaction because they're not anxious about lying. And so they pass. But, you know, sociopaths are so good. They're so practiced. They've been lying all their lives, and they are quite capable of doing it in a way that you can't tell. You can't tell that it's whatever they're saying is fabrication.
So that's sort of a scary thing to contemplate. And it's sort of a scary thing to believe that there are these people out there who are sort of hell-bent on ruining your life through a relationship, and we're not that great at picking them out. So what is the best way to protect yourself and to not make yourself vulnerable to these kinds of predators?
First of all, you make a very important point, is that anyone can be targeted by a sociopath. It's important to understand how many of them are out there. The numbers are actually frightening. If you look at the official estimates of people who could be diagnosed with those disorders that I discussed, that would be antisocial, narcissistic, borderline, histrionic, or psychopathic personality disorders, it could be about 12% of the population. So that means there are 30 million adults in the United States who are probably disordered. I mean, that's a huge number. It's massive. And plus, there are also people who have partial disorders. And what that means is that they have some of the traits, but not all of them. And believe me, you don't want to get involved with them either. So, you know, we are talking that there are millions of people out there who are very dangerous, you know, to our mental health, physical health, financial health, or health in general. So the first thing is to understand that they are out there and to understand that they are in all demographic groups. You know, a lot of people may think, you know, sociopaths are all serial killers or they're all criminals. Most of them don't kill anybody, put it that way. They can engage in crime and get away with it. And lots of these people are not in jail, although, you know, there are lots that are, but there are far more that are on the loose. They can be in any profession. I mean, I've spoken to people who were involved with sociopaths who were teachers, doctors, members of the clergy, military. I mean, we're not all just talking, you know, drug dealers or cartel members or something like that. You know, so they can be absolutely everywhere. So the first step is to know that they exist and know that they can be everywhere. The second step is to educate yourself about what the traits are. And so we talked about a little of this. You know, there's more information available. There's plenty of information on love fraud in my books, in other people's books. You know, there's, I mean, when I started this back in 2005, nobody was talking about sociopaths, but now lots of people are, although they tend to mention it in the context of narcissists. I think that probably a lot of the narcissists actually are antisocial, but whatever, you know, as long as they're talking about it. The first step is to know that they're out there. The second step is to educate yourself about the warning signs, the behaviors. And the third step, as I said before, is to trust your intuition. Your intuition will warn you when something is off. You know, you'll get a chill down your back. You'll get an upset stomach. You know, you'll just get an idea that, you know, this person is lying. And the key is to pay attention to that. You know, because in all honesty, our society doesn't encourage us to listen to our intuition. In fact, we get all these messages that make it difficult for us to recognize that sociopaths are out there and make us more vulnerable. For example, you know, we all go to school and learn that all men are created equal. And, you know, we all deserve a second chance. And everybody has good inside. And we're all God's children. Well, you know, that's accurate for approximately 88% of the population. But for that 12% that is probably disordered, we can't treat them the way we would treat somebody who is like us and who is not disordered. So we need to be aware that they're out there and pay attention when our instincts are telling us that something is wrong.
When I interviewed E.J. Dixon for this show, we discussed a concept called cult hopping, where someone will go from one high demand situation to another high demand situation. This unfortunately happens with situations where people date sociopaths and then leave that person and then date another sociopath. Why does that happen?
The reason it happens is because people are not sufficiently recovered. And I mean, yes, it is true that I've heard of people who have been in one situation with a sociopath and then get involved with another one. I mean, I've heard that many, many times. And the problem is that there's actually research of this, that abuse in the past makes people susceptible to abuse again in the future. And, you know, there's plenty of research that shows this, and they especially talk about those who have experienced abuse as children, in that they it can definitely make them vulnerable to abuse in a partnership or later on in their life. So the solution is recovery. The solution is allowing yourself to really do the deep emotional work that enables you to overcome the pain of what you've experienced and the abuse that you've experienced. This is where a lot of people make a mistake, especially, you know, when they've had a relationship with a sociopath, is because, you know, they escape one sociopath. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen stories like this. They escape or divorce a particular sociopath, and I mean, they're just totally traumatized, and everything is terrible, and the guy's taking all the money, and they're really struggling. And lo and behold, somebody else comes along and seems to be the savior. This is the person that's going to save me, protect me, and all this other. And it's another sociopath, and, you know, and it becomes worse. So the real reason is that they have not been able to overcome the emotional pain before. And so if someone is ever involved in either with a sociopath or in a cult situation also, the key is deep emotional healing. I mean, that's what needs to happen in order to be able to move past the experience and really get the type of life that everybody wants and deserves.
So let's say I'm listening to this podcast. I have figured out that the person that I am dating is a sociopath. I need to get out. How do I get out? Explain to me what the best way is of getting out and what to say.
The key is no contact. So what you want to do is, once you figure out what you're dealing with, you want to make your plan to get out. And, you know, it depends on the type of relationship. If you've just been dating this guy, you know, for a month or something like that, and there's no real entanglement, you just say, it's over, don't contact me ever again. And you could ghost them, anything, you know, just get rid of that person. If you've been married to this person for 30 years, you know, which has happened because I've spoken to people like that, it's far more complicated. So sometimes you may need to get your ducks in a row in order to figure out the safest way to get out of a relationship, because there is research that shows once someone leaves an abuser, I mean, that is the most dangerous time. And if the abuser is physically abusive, it could really turn bad. Sometimes you have to pretend that, you know, everything is the same. I mean, the last thing you do is confront. You never go to the person and say, I know what you are, you know, and I mean, that's the last thing you want to do. So you might have to pretend for a while that everything is still the same until you figure out the best way for you to get out of the involvement. Because once you get out, you want to get out permanently. I mean, you want to establish no contact. You want to have no interaction with this person at all, because that's when your brain starts to unravel. Is, you know, you get out of the web when you're not around this person anymore, and the person is continuing with the manipulation. So that's the key, is the no contact. So you need to be in a position when you leave that you're able to establish and then maintain no contact and never go back to this person again.
So the harder question is one that I've asked many times to people on this show about cults, which is, how do I talk to somebody if I suspect that they're in a cult? How do I talk to somebody if I suspect they're in a relationship with a sociopath and they're in danger?
That can be really difficult depending on how far along your sister or whoever the person is involved. If it's fairly early on, you may be able to just present some information, but it's the same thing as trying to get someone out of a cult. You know, it can be really difficult. Luckily, there's more awareness now than there was years ago when I first started writing for Love Fraud. So I would say that if you see something, then, you know, definitely try and find a way to voice your concerns that is not threatening. And, you know, perhaps provide some information, try and offer, you know, send them to Love Fraud, you know, it's give them a book, you know, here's some things. But you do have to do this in a way that doesn't turn your friend or relative against you. Because, you know, just like when someone's involved in the cult, you need to be able to maintain contact. If you can educate them, great. If they take your advice and end it, great. But it may or may not work. And so then you may have to go into doing what you can to maintain contact, even if the person is still with the predator.
What's the most important thing that you want people who are listening to this podcast to know about sociopaths and these types of relationships?
Here's what people need to understand. People need to understand that there are people in the world who pursue romantic relationships, not for love, but for exploitation. And those are the people who are sociopaths. So it's very important that anyone who is seeking a romantic relationship be aware that they're out there. And then, as I said before, know the warning signs and listen to your intuition. Because The thing is, they are very capable of proclaiming, I love you. And those are great words that sociopaths are often very quick to say. The truth is that sociopaths are totally incapable of love. They do not have it in them. They cannot be in a loving relationship. But they have learned that if they say the words, I love you, they get what they want. So the idea is just to be aware that sociopaths are out there. They're pursuing relationships in order to take advantage of you for whatever reason. And people just need to know that I love you doesn't always mean what we think it means.
Donna Anderson, thank you so much for being with us today. You can find out more about Donna and Love Fraud and buy her books on lovefraud.com. There is information about that in the show description.
Thank you for listening to On Belief, a podcast about cults. I'm Karen Geyer. You can follow me at KarenGeier, or follow the podcast on Instagram or Twitter at On Belief Pod. And you can contribute to the Patreon at patreon.com/KarenGeier. You can also visit our website. It's just onbelief.com.